hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. I, of course, am Mr. Warren Hayes, but that's not what's captivating your attention right now. You're like, a special edition? What's so special about it? Well, we're a week removed from a brand new AEW pay-per-view, AEW Revolution 2023, the first one of the year for All Elite Wrestling, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I am going to preview the show. I'm going to give you my predictions. We're going to talk about the makeup of the show as we move into it. So I'm glad you're here. I'm honored, humbled even, that you are tuning in to watch this. Tuning in again, you know, I'm pushing 50. Clicking on this, pressing play, watching this on youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes. If you are watching this right now, consider a like. Consider a subscription if this is the first time you're here as well, because I do a bunch of wrestling content here that you might enjoy. But more importantly, the like would be great. The subscription would be the cherry on top, would be the icing on the cake, would be the foam on the pudding. Do you put foam on pudding? And in regards to audio podcast feeds, right? Because the Mr. Warren Hayes Show is out there as an audio podcast as well. Well, hey, you can absolutely, positively, 100% unquestionably show some love there through a review on Apple Podcasts. A 5-star one, perhaps, or a 5-star rating on Spotify. Those things help out a great deal. And I would appreciate the support. Who doesn't appreciate a little support? Just like we appreciate AEW pay-per-views in general, right? Full Gear was a fantastic show. The last one that we had. Just an amazing thing that was put together. I thought it was a very, very strong pay-per-view. Now we're heading into this territory here with a more focused... I think a focus was found with Full Gear, and I feel like the product has been much more focused moving forward here. Yeah, focus. I think focus is the right word. There's a lot of good stuff on this paper, but I'm going to tell you that, like, one of the things I'm recording this, by the way, on Saturday, February 25th, so a week removed from the pay-per-view, or a week or so, or a day. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I know not all the matches have been announced yet, but AEW has a tendency, right, to put a hell of a lot of matches on their pay-per-views, which I know is a big deal for a lot of people. It's a problem. It doesn't necessarily bother me. AEW puts on quarterly pay-per-views. They can stuff it with matches as much as they want. It's their show, their product. They don't have to cater to... I always feel this discussion around pay-per-view lengths and the number of matches that are on a pay-per-view and how problematic it may or may not be. I feel it is a wrestling pundit slash journalist problem, where if you are someone who watches a lot of wrestling because that's what you want to do, either you do that for a living or you cover it out of passion, I think it's a problem that's specific to us, because if you are a wrestling fan, there is nothing that's tying you to watch everything that's available. But a lot of people make it a point. It's like, I can't miss a minute of Raw. I can't miss a minute of Dynamite and Rampage and SmackDown and the pay-per-views. You know, WWE PLEs, they do one every month. And then, so then you get to AEW and you're exhausted because there's like... I think it is a problem that's native to content creators as opposed to fans, or as opposed to content creators. And I know, you know, some of them are out there and I listen to a few. Some people who are focused on one specific wrestling product, WWE, AEW, Nuge. You don't hear those people complain about the lengths of pay-per-views. I think it is a specific problem for a certain set of people, and I don't think it's generalized. I don't even think it makes sense. That being said, I'm weary that this pay-per-view might be too long. when the Iron Man match was announced, my immediate thought was, Oh, brother. Okay. So we're getting one match that is 60 minutes. And we're going to fill up the card with, like, you know, 10 other matches. Holy shit. Are we going to be in bed by one, Tony? You know, kind of thing. And that, but length of a pay-per-view is absolutely an issue, right? I couldn't help but wonder, are they going to adjust the undercard in that sense? Are they going to adjust the undercard to accommodate the 1 hour thing? And as it stands right now, as of today, there are 7 matches booked for the main card. Now, AEW, like I said in the past, if we just take the last 2 pay-per-views, outside of the pre-show, which I think is, you know, it's an entirely different thing. Outside of the pre-show, Full Gear had 10 matches total. All Out had 11 matches total. That's usually what we're around, right? Now we're up to 7. There's probably still room for a match or two. You know, a couple of things that haven't been announced as it stands that I feel might be added to the show, right? We have Christian Cage and Jack Perry, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, which may be added to the card. Or, you know, Tony might stretch this one out a little bit, which is possible. You know, I understand that right now it feels hot. Maybe strike when the iron is hot. You know, when an angle's working, you might as well make it work. And it's a good mid-card feud that people are into. I thought the angle last week on Dynamite was fantastic. Maybe, yeah, it could end up there. Or, you know, Tony might put it on a big edition of Dynamite and, you know, stretch out the true payoff to the feud at Double or Nothing. And he's done this before. We've seen it. But you know, if there's a match that hasn't been announced yet that would make sense to end up there, I think that is one of them. You know, a lot of people have been talking about Swerve and Keith Lee, which would also make sense if it was me. I would do the exact opposite. I would keep it off this pay-per-view, and I would shift it towards some big matches on Dynamite. Maybe, yeah, give that one a little more gas, because there's the possibility of giving it a little more gas because Dustin Rhodes is involved in this. Or pre-show it, right? The pre-show is an hour that is completely separate from this. Because the thing that we're risking here, most importantly, because again, I don't have an issue with having multiple matches on the show, but the more matches you end up adding here, considering that the main event is going to be 1 hour, the more matches you add, the shorter all these matches are going to be. Like, this is not going, you know, we're joking here. We're saying, oh, what if we go to bed by one? But no, you know, this is going to be broadcast on Fight and so on and so forth. So they have a fixed amount of time that they have to adhere to. There's a window of broadcast that they have that they absolutely have to adhere to. So if things start going long on the pay-per-view, they're not going to cut from the main event. They're going to cut from the other matches. So the more matches you put on, the more matches you risk going over, shortening for time, and the more, you know, and the more matches you have, the shorter they end up being. And that, in some cases, could be a positive. I think Samoa Joe and Wardlow, if you go for a short sprint, like a 7-8 minute sprint, I think would be awesome, considering the two guys involved. But, you know, I don't think anyone wants the trios match to last 8 minutes. So this is kind of what I feel we're composing with, and that I'm a little antsy about. Little antsy. You got the ants going. Little, you know, making a little, you know, some tunnels, tunneling through my innards. It's kind of gross right now what I'm talking about. But this is my main concern, I would say. Too many matches instantly means they're going to be, you're shaving time off of every match. Not every match needs to be 25 minutes. Don't get me wrong. But the more you add on, the shorter they all become. And there's things that you don't have to shoehorn in on, that you don't have to shoehorn into the pay-per-view either. As it stands right now, I think everything that's on the card currently makes sense. Let's talk about it. Let's go right ahead. Again, we're recording this 1 week away from the pay-per-view. There's a Dynamite and a Rampage left. Tony likes to add matches last minute to the cards, which is absolutely fine. So maybe there's some things that I'm not going to talk about. I believe if I were to add, if there are any matches right now that are missing, like I said, I think Christian Cage and Jungle Boy Jack Perry is a blatant omission right now, but I mean blatant. So it's just not here right now. That's mostly the thing. So that doesn't concern me too much because I'm sure it's going to end up being on the show. But like I said, Tony's booking patterns in regards to these payoff feuds can have multiple instances of it. We've seen it with, CM Punk and MJF and Jon Moxley and even here with Hangman Adam Page, things happening on Dynamites don't necessarily mean that they're going to take away from any pay-per-view matches. We can get the big blow-offs. So maybe, I say Christian Cage and Jungle Boy should be on the pay-per-view, but I would not be surprised if it's not. And that this gets stretched out a little bit. So let's get into the card. Let's start talking about it. I'm on Wikipedia right now, on the Wikipedia page for Revolution. Gonna break them down from the bottom up as they are presented here. First of all, the Elite, Kenny Omega, Nick Jackson, and Matt Jackson, aka the Young Bucks, gonna be taking on the House of Black for the Trios Championship. This was announced, I believe, last night on Rampage. I'm not gonna lie. I watched the Bucks versus Aussie Open with much interest. I watched Willow and Tony Storm tear the house down. I thought that was a fantastic match. Sort of trailed off after that. So this is, this is a match that everyone was expecting and is excited for. The House of Black have not flexed any muscle, really, since making their big return. I don't know what any of this, what this means, because look, you still can't discount the numerous rumors that existed around the departure or the alleged departure of Aleister Black, his wanting his time off and being done with AEW, all those reports. We're not going to rehash all of that. But you have to wonder, is this still a thing? Is this still accurate? I don't know. I am not around to see this. And then now, compounded to this, we have discussions about Kenny Omega and the Bucks, their contract coming up, that Kenny's contract was up in January. Like, this is all speculation, right? I just want you to bear with me here in my thought process. Kenny's contract would have been up in January, but they added time off to the contract. So now, there's no option that's been renewed. He's on extra time right now. So there's that little wrinkle as well that's being added to this whole situation. Where it's like, we've got contracts coming up probably late fall with Omega, the Jacksons. I'm not going to get into that. We've got, contract things that might or might not be going on with Buddy Murphy and Aleister Black. So how will this hang in the balance of this match here and moving forward? Now, if the elite drop the titles here, I think this is one where you can start scratching your beard stubble, going, this is an interesting little wrinkle amidst all these discussions about contract renegotiation, so on and so forth. The elite have their titles removed. Because, look, if a guy or a gal is leaving your wrestling company, it's not a question that you're going to want to bury them, but you're going to want to use them, right, to put over the guys and gals who stay in the territory. That's a tale as true as time. You know, Bryan Danielson on his way out lost over and over again to Roman Reigns. That's just how it goes. So, I mean, look, we're months away. We don't know how these negotiations are going. We have no clue. But we're months away. But we do. It is safe to assume that the negotiations for contract renewal are ongoing right now. This might be a sign. I think, like, if the elite drop the titles to the House of Black, I think that might absolutely 100% be a sign. Will it be a sign that Malakai Black, Brody King are leaving, or Buddy Matthews are leaving AEW if they lose the title, the championship? See, I wouldn't be as cut and dry as that. I not as cut and dry, but I wouldn't apply the same level of logic. Because yes, there have been talks, but nothing quite as serious as what we've heard with Omega and the Jacksons. This is a match that a lot of people have been waiting for a long time, and people were like, well, this has no build. Not wrong, but, you know, we've also seen Tony, and especially in the case of the Trios title here, use pay-per-view matches to ignite feuds as opposed to the opposite, right? So not unlike, you know, the most recent example with the Elite and their feud with Death Triangle, which was supposed to be a blow-off, one-out-of-nowhere match on the pay-per-view, suddenly become a best-of-seven series and one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest best-of-series of all time in pro wrestling. This might actually be a kickoff point for deeper shenanigans with the House of Black. This could actually be it. The truly only thing that I bemoan in this entire situation is not having more House of Black hitting the ring and having squash matches right and left with trios of jabrones. You know, have a little, look, I know they did some work with QT Marshall and his crew. They did that months ago at this point. It's almost buried into our subconscious at this moment. It's not as if the best friends are on this incredible run that needs to be absolutely protected. Could have had a little spat there. Could have brought in, you could have brought in some former Trustbusters together, or you know, Mark Sterling's crew. What do they call them? The Varsity Boys, the Varsity Dudes, the Varsity Club. No, I don't remember. But multiple opportunities for the House of Black to just come in and murder people decisively and feel bigger and badder than they are. Vignettes are fine. And I know the vignettes are very divisive with a lot of people. They're like, oh, I hate it. And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, another guy in another company doing, you know, dark shadowy vignettes and then having spooky shit happen all the time. This is not necessarily the case with the House of Black. The spookiest thing they do is house lights off, house lights on. You know, I really would have liked last night after the Aussie Open match, which was fantastic if you haven't watched it. After the Aussie Open match when they all appeared, I think it would have been fun as hell for them to beat the shit out of the Elite right there. Wouldn't that have been fun? And then you replay that on Dynamite, like, hey, you asshats, look at what you missed on Rampage. I don't know. Because I feel like there's a tremendous amount of fan interest in this feud. But I don't feel it's getting like the booking support. And I'm wondering if there isn't political reasons behind this. We'll see what the result is and we'll see what happens after. Because somehow, if I follow Tony's booking patterns, when he comes into a match like this on the pay-per-view that doesn't have much build, he has a tendency, and it's not straight across the board, but he has a tendency to continue the feud afterwards and continue building it, adding stuff to it. Regardless, see, we're here talking about what's going to happen after as opposed to what's going to happen on the... I think this is going to be a fantastic match. I believe this could easily be match of the night. I think this could absolutely 100% be the biggest match of the night as far as work rate, drama, just an intense match. I think this could be it. Hot take, Warren? No, not really, right? Not much of a hot take on this one. I think the Elite retain. And this feud stretches on. I don't think they're done. Next match we're going to talk about is Jamie Hayter defending the AEW Women's World Championship against Saraya and Ruby Soho. I think it's hard to argue right now that Jamie Hayter is the best women's wrestler in North America. I think Ruby Soho is a good professional wrestler. And if you've been listening to the Mr. Warren Hayes show and the Dynamite reviews right here, subscribe. You won't miss those if you got no more excuse. You know that I'm starting to feel down on Saraya and her contributions to All Elite Wrestling. First and foremost, again, anyone who knows me knows very clearly what I'm going to say here next. There's no shock. I'm bummed that this is a triple threat, a three-way. Don't call it a triple threat. I'm bummed that this is what they're doing for a singles title. I'm not a fan of it. I feel like Saraya is being shoehorned into this for the angle, whereas a Jamie Hayter Ruby Soho match would have been perfectly acceptable in my eyes and would have had a lot more interest. But now the fact that it's a triple threat, that Saraya is in there, that she's probably going to have her ass carried in this match, I'm a little down on it. And I feel like I'm fearing that this AEW original / don't call them former WWE women angle that they have going is going to take center stage here and is going to distract from the match. Not that AEW has a tendency to do it, but you'll notice that there's been a lot of smoke and mirrors when it comes to Saraya. Been trying to cover up a lot of her weaknesses. Like Saraya is she came into prominence in WWE, wrestling a certain style, and she hasn't grown out of it. And I will hammer this home to the end of time. The women in AEW who get themselves over are not mic workers, because there is legitimately, if we're being completely honest with each other, there is one great promo artist in the women's division in AEW, and that is Britt Baker. And Britt Baker she's on an island, she's special, she may not have the work rate of a Jamie Hayter, or a Hikaru Shida, or a Serena Deeb, but she got herself over because she's a superstar. She's on an island, she's on her own. She's a good professional wrestler. I think she's very competent. But at different intervals, we're all over with in this company. We're all over with the fans. Riho, what do they all have in common? Work rate. The AEW audience is an audience that appreciates good in-ring, good work rate. Why do you think Jamie Hayter got herself over the way she did? Because she got into a ring and she wrestled. She dominated. She looks, acts, performs like a professional wrestler. That's how she got herself over. Not because of her mic skills. Now they're giving her the mic. Now they're letting her flex her promo muscles a little more. And that's awesome. And ultimately, this is what AEW fans want out of their wrestlers. They want workers. Why do you think we've been clamoring for an alternative all this time? It's not to get the same thing. So, Hayter, Ruby comes in with, you know, experience baggage as well. She was already beloved. And Saraya did too. But I think she's burnt up a lot of goodwill with very questionable in-ring and sloppy segments. And there'll be one that hits, and then there'll be others where you're like, so, you know, I was talking about Bill of Goods on the review this week. You know, I'm still at that spot. And it bothers me because I feel I wanted the Saraya thing to work. Again, if you didn't listen to the review, I'm not going to go into detail. I'm not going to hammer this home again. But, you know, I feel like Saraya never had a chance to go out to retire in the way that befitted her, because she was a superstar. Let's put it that way. She was dictated by WWE and a dude saying, no, you can't wrestle anymore. She was like, no, I can't. Said, no, you can't. We got nothing for you, pal. Creative's got nothing for you. So what does she do? Takes matters in her own hands. She's like, I'm going to go out my own way. Good for her. Good for her. Not saying that she absolutely is going to retire within a year, but the point is that she gets control of her legacy, right? She takes control of it, removes control of her legacy from Vince McMahon, and is like, I'm going to take things into my own hands. And I'm wondering if this was a good idea, because I wanted this to work. I wanted Saraya to have a fantastic run, and this isn't it. So, am I completely done and buried with her? No, I think what she's been doing right now is not very good. Is there a way to salvage it? Maybe. I'm going to keep an open mind. I think she has value, but I don't think she's being used to her strengths. And when it comes to her in-ring work in AEW, there's a lot of things that she does that doesn't fly here. So is she, so, you know, look, we're in the triple threat here. I don't see, why would you have Jamie Hayter drop the title? I don't think that there's nothing here to indicate that should happen, other than, is Ruby Soho there to, take the pin and Jamie Hayter continues to look strong? And I'm 100% turning on this idea of you have to keep someone looking strong. I'm 100% turning against it. I think it's a terrible, short-sighted, poor booking. Awful booking. The more you think about it, the less it makes sense. If you have to keep everyone strong, don't book the match. No one really gets over. Look, we don't have any proof. We don't have any real precedent, I don't think. I don't recall of, you know, some kind of swerve booking like this. Like, everything points to Jamie retaining the title. And I think she should continue, because right now she's the best worker in the women's division. She's one of the best women's wrestlers. She's the best women's wrestler in North America right now. I think it's difficult to disagree. They kept the belt on women, on other women, much longer, going through much more of the division before having them drop. I think she can I don't think this reign comes to an end here, but I feel like we may get overshadowed. I think we may get overshadowed by all this faction war going on. Next, we're going to have Chris Jericho versus Ricky Starks. Singles match, of course. Jericho Appreciation Society was banned from ringside because Ricky Starks finessed Chris Jericho into signing a contract, which I think is hilarious. I like that angle. There's two ways that you can go about this. One, and I think the obvious one, I think the best one, if you are serious about making Ricky Starks a superstar, is to have him defeat Chris Jericho once again, clean as a sheet. He's 2-0, and let this one die. Let this feud come to full circle and move on. I don't think there's any reason to stretch this out to a trilogy. You know, if we recall, you know, Jericho did somewhat the same thing to MJF, where, you know, MJF was scoring wins on Chris Jericho, and Chris Jericho wanted one more match just to prove that I could beat you, you know, at, what was it, All Out? I don't quite remember. I think so. Or Double or Nothing. Memory's a little off here. And they did it, and Jericho won, and I was like, what? This serves no purpose. You know, it sort of takes a little, heat away from MJF. I hope we've learned from this. I hope we do the right thing here. Because AEW has complete faith in Ricky Starks. He's being positioned on the cards at important moments, big quarter hours. He's been good. Crowd loves him. Let's just go all the way. Let's not pull a Sami Zayn here. Maybe the comparison isn't quite adequate. But I mean that in the sense that, look, you have a hot act. You want to keep making him hotter. Don't pump the brakes for story purposes. If you're a booker and you are trying to build this new generation of stars, and a guy like Chris Jericho, who probably has a nose for this as well, is like, yeah, let's just do it. Jericho's in an angle right now where he's like, look, have I lost my touch? This is his story right now. Have I lost the magic? Because he lost to Starks, he lost to Andretti. Up-and-comers, flash in the pans, like he likes to call them, right? He has the JAS around him to make him feel secure. So that he's like, well, you know, I can win. Because I have my crew around me. Now he doesn't have them around him. I think Ricky should absolutely win this. Absolutely 100% pull the win off here. And I even think that this should be the culmination of this feud. I think we can absolutely move on from this. Get Ricky into another program with another hot star. Because it's undeniable. And I think you have to be... It's undeniable that this feud with Ricky Starks has been good for Ricky Starks. Because it has helped elevate him. Look, because here's the thing. He loses against MJF in that title defense last fall. He loses that title defense. And people are like, shit, what's next for Ricky Starks? What's next for Ricky Starks? Being thrown into a feud with Chris Jericho, one of the legends in the business, still going strong, a top draw in the company. Ricky Starks is on TV practically every week. The follow-up to the MJF loss has been fantastic, and I think this is the trajectory that you have to keep going with Ricky Starks. It's like, him building himself up so that he can be next time when it's his turn up to bat to go for the world title. He's not going to drop it because he's going to be too big, too hot. And I think he has to move on. I think there is a little fatigue in regards to the Jericho Appreciation Society stuff specifically. But in regards to what this is doing for Ricky Starks, this is huge. So hopefully, they'll do the right thing, have Ricky win. Chris Jericho can do whatever he wants. And if this is his role moving forward, is to stop feuding with, you know, the Danielsons of the world and start being put up against, you know, up-and-comers, new guys, elevating new people. That's what he should be for. Let's keep going like that. Well, being an entertaining shit heel in the meantime, absolutely. I would say Ricky Starks win. I would not be surprised if Chris Jericho wins. I would be a little disappointed in the result, I would say. But I think Ricky wins, and next Wednesday, the following Wednesday on Dynamite, we just move to something else. Samoa Joe's going to defend the AEW TNT Championship against Wardlow. Look, the writing is on the wall here. Wardlow is winning this title. He is coming in and he is going to have I would hope that he would have a more impactful, interesting push this time around as TNT champion than his previous reign. And why would that be? Well, because he's going to be featured on that AEW All Access show. His name was dropped in the press release. Booker's going to book. If your guy's going to be on a TV show doing TV things, you put the title on him. Plus, on top of that, again, I mentioned this on the Dynamite reviews. Again, subscribe. You don't want to miss those. Pat myself on the back for it when it happened. When Wardlow had that incredible sit-down interview with JR, he showed a side of himself that we didn't know he had. Affable, well-spoken, charming, relatable, down-to-earth, charismatic, handsome man. Well, we knew he was a handsome man. But you understand my point? Next thing you know, well, he's going to be featured on the television show. Oh, shooby zerbers. He's winning the title. He's getting it back. I'm actually hoping this is, like I said at the start of the show, I hope this is an 8-minute sprint with this, just these two guys. You know what? Pulling off a Brock Lesnar, Bobby Lashley, but actually following through and giving us a great finish. I hope this is what this is. These guys are supposed to hate each other regardless. I don't, you know. It will probably not start with a collar and elbow lockup. This is great stuff. I'm excited for this match. I'm excited for Wardlow to win. Looking forward to his reign moving forward. But this has been very good. Nice little mid-card feud, and it's going to get Wardlow. It's going to make everyone who says Wardlow is cold now, which he isn't, anyone who says Wardlow is cold now is not watching the show, is not paying attention. It's just as simple as that. He may not be at the heights that he was, but he is not cold. Maybe cold by AEW standards. Maybe if you compare it to, you know, the extreme heights of heat that he was achieving with the MJF storyline, which we don't know how it was going to ultimately end up. There were decisions that were made because of backstage shenanigans. 2022 was plagued. I'm really looking forward to this match. I'm looking forward to the result. And like I said, going to wrap up this idea. Anyone who tells you that Wardlow is cold hasn't been paying attention. Does not watch the show. Just does not watch the show. And there are more and more people out there dropping opinions on AEW Dynamite and the talent and don't watch the shows. There legitimately are more and more people doing that. Because people go on Twitter, they look at reactions, they follow a couple of accounts, they look at GIFs, and then suddenly they understand. Wardlow wins the belt, is my prediction. Next, Jon Moxley and Hangman Adam Page are going to go at it in a Texas death match. How excellent has this been? How, like, from top to bottom, the concussion is unfortunate and it sucks. It is a terrible thing that happened to Adam Page and it stinks. And it is fantastic that he was able to get back into, that he was able to get back on his feet so quickly. And, you know, being able to use that angle, or not an angle, but that unfortunate situation into an angle is amazing. And look at the dividends that it's paying, that look at the dividends right now that are being paid off. We have a hot, hot feud with two guys who have beat the shit out of each other on free TV. Well, cable. I've been told I shouldn't call it free TV anymore, but you know what I mean when I say free TV. You don't have to pay extra to watch it, is what I'm saying. Extra for the match. We're getting this on a Wednesday night. They fought each other twice since. And we're still going, yeah, let's do more. And they're going to go in a hardcore match. We saw Paige pull out the barbed wire last weekend, last Wednesday, on Dynamite. So this is going to be a mess. It's going to be bloody, violent. This is what you have to expect from a Jon Moxley match moving forward. Mox has been so critical for this company, and he is still being critical for this company and in the evolution of Hangman Adam Page as a top guy in the company, as a top babyface. Mox has been healing it up a little bit. He's a little more, I'm not going to outright say that he's a heel because, you know, he's been tweening it up, right? What he did with Evil Uno on Wednesday, that wasn't cool. That's not pure babyface stuff. Everyone popped when Adam Page came in for the save, despite the weird music. That's another story. But everyone was excited. So Page's profile is improving as well as he's working with the toughest son of a bitch in the company. Arguably the MVP of AEW, the ace, which is wild. And a lot of people like to say Adam Page is the ace, and he is. I'm being sarcastic here. I'm just being stupid. Jon Moxley has been nothing but he held that ship together in 2022. He is a top guy in the company. He's a top guy in wrestling. He never loses. And I think he's going to take another loss to Adam Page. He's going to take another loss to Adam Page in a brutal affair that is going to rule. Page knows what's on the line here for him in his career. If you don't think that Tony Khan right now is not prepping, slowly building Adam Page to be a contender for the world title, you are out of your mind. And again, you do not watch the show. Is he going to be the guy at Double or Nothing? Or that's, you know, we'll see. I don't think so. I think we're going to stretch this out later into the year. But Paige is being slowly groomed as a top guy, as a serious contender for MJF. He already is a top guy. He's a former world champion. But you want to heat them up. You want to heat up your contenders. You want to give them that good babyface heat before they get into the program. That's what booking does. That's what true long-term booking is supposed to do. Not wait till, oh, now that we're in the program, now we're going to heat it up. No, heat them up before you get to the program. That's how it works. I'm excited for this match. Paige is going to leave it all out there. Everyone's saying, oh, I hope they work safe. They're going to work as safe as they can. It's pro wrestling. These are pros. Accidents happen. I'm excited for this. Hangman Adam Page wins. It's going to be good. Then we have the four-way tag team match for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. Champions, the Gun Club versus the Acclaimed versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett versus the winner of the Casino Tag Team Royale, which is going to happen this week on Dynamite again. I'm recording before it. I am super bummed about this match. I don't like it. I don't like how this was built. I don't like how this is coming together. I believe that the Acclaimed is one of these acts that do not need a title. They are over regardless. I'm glad that they did win the championships when it happened because they were super hot and you go with your hot hand. I think it was successful. Like, it was successful. Don't get me wrong. But they don't need the titles. I think it's weird. Someone was talking about this week. Slipping my mind. But someone was talking about this week, and you know, I can only parrot the point here. I think it's the guys on the Flagship Podcast. The Acclaimed, the Acclaimed cashing in their rematch clause, which, by the way, and I said this on my review, that's a slippery slope we're on. I am not pro that. I don't like it. I hope this does not become a thing. Because it stunk in WWE. And it doesn't make sense and it's stupid. So the fact that they're doing this here, that we're going to cash in for this four-way match, which was supposed to be a triple threat, but we're going to make it a four-way. Why would they make it harder for them to reclaim the titles by fighting two other teams on top of the champs? It's stupid. It doesn't make sense to me. And then the fact that the match in and about itself was supposed to be a multi-team match, and now it's a four-way, there's nothing in this that I enjoy. And we're going to have all the regular tropes where this is a no disqualification match, but the tags are all going to happen, and the referee's going to try and get people to go back into their corners when there's no disqualifications. Who gives a fuck? Doesn't bother me that the Guns won the title. The Guns won the title because it's heat. Lethal and Jarrett in here, I think it's fine. I think Jeff Jarrett's run in AEW has been spotless. I think it's been great. Should the Acclaimed regain the titles? I don't care. The Acclaimed are going to be over regardless. I actually think this is a good idea. Have them chase the titles a little bit. We only have one team left to be announced. The winner of this week's Casino Tag Team Battle Royal. And again, I gotta hammer this home because this entire thing doesn't make sense to me, and I really don't like it. I really, really don't like it. Everything that has to do with this with this build to this match. You're having qualification matches to enter a four-way. Why not just have qualifiers, a tournament, if you may, to determine the number one contender and just have a good old-fashioned one-on-one tag team match? I'm not a fan of these for title matches. I'm really not a fan of it. You know, the trios matches make sense, but if you add, like, if you add three teams in a trios match, I'm like, okay, what are we doing? You know, championships One versus one, champion versus challenger. That's what's most compelling. And because then after that, like I said, then we get into a series of tropes. Anyway, I'm going off track because I wanted to talk about the Casino Battle Royal that's happening this Wednesday. The teams who have been announced to be in it, The Kingdom, Butcher and the Blade, the Lucha Bros, the BCC represented by Claudio and Wheeler Utah. We've got Los Ingobernables. Roosh and Preston Vance. Top Flight are also going to be in it. Aussie Open are flying back in for another booking. Good for them. You know, they probably haven't flown out. Menard and Angelo from Jericho Appreciation Society, the best friends. Silver and Reynolds. That's who we have announced so far. Now, this is a Casino Battle Royal, right? So technically, there's going to be a wild card, the Joker suit, if we're still doing it in that formula, right? I think speculation around FTR is a fair speculation to have. And honestly, like, this match at the pay-per-view right now needs a little gas, needs a little FTR coming in here. To spruce up the thing, because I think it's kind of I am not looking forward to this, because here's the thing, because then everyone's like, but Warren, we could, you know, throw in the Lucha Bros in here. Why would you waste the Lucha Brothers in this stuff? Lucha Brothers are extraordinary, And I'm gonna end this here because I do want to have some time to talk about the main event. But what a situation the tag team division in AEW is today, as opposed to when it was when it started and what we were promised and what it was supposed to be, right? Tag teams main eventing pay-per-views, right? And the tag team division was so deep, rich with talent. And we're positioned as high attractions, like top guys, not just top guys in the division, top guys in the company. And all this is like, the tag team division in AEW still has extremely talented people in here. You know, Silver and Reynolds don't get half the credit they do. The Kingdom are great. You know, Aussie Open flying in and out. Butcher and the Blade, what are we even talking about? But they're all treated like secondary acts, where there was a time the tag team division was hot as hell. And no, it wasn't when the Bucks were champions. For those of you who are about to, well, you know it's the Bucks. No. I really don't know what's going to happen in this match. Whoever is the Casino Tag Team Royale winner will probably be the winner of this of the match. I think that is the safest bet. I'm perfectly okay with the Acclaim not winning the titles back, because they're over. They're over regardless. And honestly, like, I'm really hoping it's FTR, because this shit needs a shot in the arm. And we're going to, like, I'm already frustrated thinking about the match, because we're going to get all the tropes. Despite the fact that these four ways are no DQs. They should just outright call it a Texas Tornado match and just let's go. Because this is what it is. This is what it should be. Maybe it's going to be the Lucha Bros as well that are going to come save the day here. I don't know. But if there's a Joker at the Casino Battle Royal, it will probably be the Joker who is going to win this match. That is my official prediction. Or the Guns are going to be skeevy little punks about it and cheat their way to a win, which is entirely possible. Not something you see a lot on AEW, but it is entirely possible. And now the main event, MJF, AEW World Champion, is going to be defending his title against Bryan Danielson. You all know the dealio here, 60-minute Iron Man match. I'm very stoked for this. This match is hot. I'm into it. I think the build was fantastic. It is consistent with MJF. He is one of the best developed wrestlers as far as character, personality that there is out there. He's layered and nuanced. And I dissected a little of what MJF is all about on a recent article over on voicesofwrestling.com, which you should check out. Is this I'm writing again. And one of the things that I mentioned is that MJF, part of his bag of tricks, is trying to get the audience feel bad for him so that he can play mind games with his opponent. And he did it again this week. This is because he's insecure. Because he's jealous. He is a petty, petty little man who has to punch, who always feels he has to punch higher than his station for people to get to like him, to respect him. He pretends, he will tell you it doesn't bother him, but it is always his impetus. MJF's motivation in this match here is to finally have people say, you are one of the all-time greats, MJF, because you just defeated one of the all-time greats. I like to think even the greatest North American wrestler to ever do it. Because to him, he's going to be, that's going to be something that cannot be denied. Danielson is doing this because he's the grizzled vet. And he's sick of this shit. He's like, yeah, okay, yes, I am the greatest of all time. And I'm going to prove it to you because I'm going to expose you for being a fraud. I'm going to take you down a couple of notches, pal. You are a fraud. And once you get into the ring with me, you're dead, pal. And MJF keeps talking about, I don't need to do five-star bangers, right? But deep down, he probably does. When I say deep down, we're talking kayfabe, right? Bear with me here. I'm not going to pretend that I know MJF personally. We're talking about the character here. The worker. Deep down inside, he's like, yeah, you know what? I want to have the glory of a match of the year. And I want to do it against a guy who has numerous MOTYs. And I want to beat him. So, and MJF, he's gonna do something shitty because it's MJF. He's gonna do something shitty because he told us he was going to do it. That promo that he did after winning the title, he explained to us in detail what heel champion booking is like. He told us, he literally laid it all out before us. And said, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what's going to happen. And we're still down that path. It's been exactly that. Now, MJF likes to say, you know, I don't do the, you know, this crazy nonsense. I don't work for five stars. I work for money, so on and so forth. So a lot of people who aren't familiar with his work don't necessarily know how really good of a worker he can be. He's a fantastic in-ring storyteller, but on top of that, he is a very good worker, and he's shown that he's ready to do the work rate spots. If you remember the top rope lariat from Takeshita, where MJF took it and landed on his feet, and everyone was like, holy shit, he can do this? Yes, he can. And I think he's going to take this opportunity nonetheless to surprise people and not just go down the, well, I don't, you know, I'm not a work rate guy. I think we're going to see things that haven't been available to us in AEW in regards to MJF. I think he's going to drive home something. This match legitimately has the potential to be a match of the year, just like the Elite versus the House of Black. I think they both have the potential to be match of the night, even a match of the year, because the people who are involved are just too good at what they do. Danielson, great, again, greatest North American wrestler to ever put on a pair of boots. I mean that sincerely, is going to be in this match. You can guarantee that something special is going to come out of this. My hopes, my expectations are high. They're lofty here. This build has been great. The potential for this match is fantastic. I think MJF retains. I think that's a no-brainer. But again, in wrestling, sometimes it's not about... It's not the destination that counts. It's the journey. And this journey has been outstanding. Just outstanding stuff. And these are master storytellers. Danielson, don't forget, has hinted that his career is wrapping up. This, you know, we might be under the shadow of Bryan Danielson calling it quits by the end of the year or so. He's, of course, he's a worker, so on and so forth, but I believe, right as it stands right now, because Danielson has been nothing but spectacular, nothing but extraordinary matches this year. He might just be working to get the best year of his career in decades. Maybe not decades, years and years and years. Pump the brakes there, Warren. But it might be one where he's on a national level and he's wrestling all these guys and he's tearing it up every time. And I think this is part of what he wants to leave behind as his legacy. And if he has one part in making MJF a bona fide transcendent superstar down the road, he will carry that with pride. And I think if this is indeed, if we're on the cusp of Danielson's swan song in wrestling, we need to savor these moments. We know he will. He will savor these moments. And we need to appreciate them too. So it's a light little card so far, match-wise. Hopefully, it doesn't get too bloated. If we start getting around 10 matches on the main card, I'm not going to be excited about it because I think there's a lot of matches that are going to suffer time-wise, quality-wise because of it. But I see great stuff. I'm excited for this card. I'm excited for it. There's going to be a lot of good stuff on it. And we'll see what pops up on the pre-show and so on and so forth. There's a couple of things I'm down on. But overall, most of the stuff here has me really, really pumped. And hopefully for you too. Let me know what you're pumped for, what you're excited for coming up. Again, if you're watching this past... this week's Dynamite, well, there's probably stuff that happened that I didn't have a chance to cover, and maybe by the time Dynamite comes around, there's stuff that happened that might flip entirely my predictions and thoughts on their head. Hopefully not. Hopefully this still has some legs. But listen, we're going to wrap this up on that note. Thank you, everyone, for listening, for watching, whether you're on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or your favorite podcast application. I appreciate it a great deal. Enjoy AEW Revolution, enjoy pro wrestling in general, and I will see you next time.